My name is Owen Flynn and welcome to episode 120 of the Trail Running Ireland podcast. In this week's show, we've René Bourque from Running Coach Ireland with a special course preview of Eco Trail Wicklow 2025 and the changes that runners can expect to see this coming Saturday. And secondly, for our feature interview, we've Ireland's new world champion on the mountains, the over 40 gold medalist from the World Masters Mountain Running Championships in Italy, Ian Conroy. Everyone, get your running gear on. Let's go. Hey guys, how are yous? Firstly, this week, all the very best of luck to the Irish team who will be competing in the World Mountain and Trail Running Championships 2025 this weekend in Canfranc in the Pyrenees in northern Spain. We'll have 33 Irish athletes going out to compete across the senior races and the under 20 races. So after us all being inspired by our track and field superstars over the last week, hopefully our Irish mountain and trail runners will be in a position to do themselves and the country proud. Good luck, guys. Have a great championships and all the very best to the Imra management and coaching team that are going out with our athletes as well. Before we call in René for our EcoTrail Wicklow preview, a sincere thanks, guys, as always, to our group of Patreons who support the show each month with the price of a gel per month. Really appreciate it, everyone. And if you've been a listener for a while to the podcast, if you like what we do, if you would like to help out the podcast, do please pop over to Patreon, Trail Running Ireland, where if you have a moment, even a small donation for a month or two will help keep the show going all year round. Okay, let's start in René for our Eco Trail Wicklow 2025 course preview. René Bourque from Running Coach Ireland. René, thanks a million for coming on today because I know you're busy getting ready for Eco Trail Wicklow 2025. And I must admit, René, I do love talking about Eco Trail every year. It's one of our favourite weekends for the two of us, I think. So apologies to maybe some of the other race directors out there that listen to the podcast for other races around the country, because we do give a lot of love and attention to Eco Trail Wicklow. But I suppose, René, it's because we've been there from the start back in 2019. We've seen it grow. We're there every year in Bray, seeing the great joy and positive energy as people cross the finish line. So it's one that's special for the two of us, isn't it?
Yeah, I think there has to be some benefit for having your own podcast on. Sometimes sometimes you can pick the race you want to talk about. But yeah, it has been a while, and I was just looking at an old article as I was doing some work on the website from the first announcement of our partnership in that race with Wicklow Wolf Brewery, you know, which is obviously one of the sponsors. And there was a picture there of Paul Mahon, you know, who was the other original race director, and the other people who were involved in the start. And I just thought, Christ, who is that bunch of young men, you know? And that was only six years ago. So it seems that it's been hard on us all in these last 6 years.
I know. But listen, the race is going well, René. And I think we've got record numbers for next weekend as well, if we're right. And we'll have a few running celebrities there. We'll have a few top runners as well from around the country and afar. So great to see that the race and indeed the sport of trail running in Ireland is going from strength to strength year on year.
Yeah, it was a funny development for this race and probably for any other race that started in 2019. You know, we had a really good start with some great numbers, you know, we sold over 1,000 tickets in the first year, and then there was lockdown for 2 years, you know, and by the time we came back, it was a bit funny for a year or two. But this year, yeah, they've had 20% growth since last year, which is large. I think the average has been 10. So I think we are kind of projecting we could potentially end up having sold more than 1,800 tickets.
Super.
Yeah, which would be, it's a big achievement in Ireland, I think, you know, because we've always wanted to see, can we break that glass ceiling of 2,000, which, you know, no race has achieved yet. And it's not because we're obsessed with growth. I think you can grow too fast and you can grow for the sake of it in any event. But it's just you kind of feel, well, 2000 is still small compared to the big road races.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, you know, in trail running, it's not always about the road because there's only so many trail runners that the trails and the mountains can hold without causing damage to the natural environment around us. But yeah, it sounds like maybe 2000 might be a nice max to aim for over the next couple of years.
Certainly in the current format, you know, and as
Yeah.
some people who've listened for a long time might know, you know, a big part of how many you can fit in is the restrictions of numbers on sections that are considered what you call it ecologically sensitive. And of course, EcoTrail, because of the whole eco ethos, tries to use primarily sustainable trail. And that's something we'll see a little bit in our route walkthrough is that for trail and mountain runners who do EcoTrail for the first time or who wonder, you know, why are there only a few sections that are kind of very technical? You know, why is there not maybe a little bit more single track in certain places? It's because that's generally where, for instance, national parks thinks that it's sensitive. And that means they want maybe 100, 200 if you're lucky, maximum. So once you have a bigger race, that's one of the challenges is you kind of have to pick not just based on what you think would be the most interesting. You have to strike a balance between saying, well, also we need to pick a trail that actually doesn't get destroyed if you send a good number of people on.
Yeah. Well, hopefully we have, Rennie, lots of those 1800 listeners tuning in for this special preview for next weekend. And you know, you can give us great insights, Rennie, yourself, because for the last couple of weeks, probably the last couple of months, you've been out on these trails, getting the course ready, making little changes along the way. And we thought maybe today that we might talk about some of those changes. And a lot of the changes are as a result that of common issues, problems that we often see in the world of trail running. And we thought that we might link in those necessary changes with the sport of trail running itself, and how that maybe how can we link it into our own recce runs at the weekends, our own training runs at the weekend, because they're issues that we have to deal with, whether it's racing or whether it's training. So we might maybe kick off with the first major change, Rennie, I think this year, which is the start through Brayhead.
Yeah, Bray is a section we didn't change it much the first few years. In the first few years, so basically the format of the course is that it's a number of what we call corridors, which means it's an out and back section that connect to different loops. And each loop is like a different experience with a different type of theme, you know. So the loops we would have is the loop of or it used to be the loop of Belmont Kilruddery Estate with at the Little Sugarloaf Mountain. There's the Great Sugarloaf Loop, which is another coastal mountain. We have what we call the Jowes Woods and Powerscourt Loop with the Powerscourt Waterfall and all that's there. And then we have the Roundwood Reservoir Loop. Last year, we then added another loop, which is called Ballinasloe. And of course, most of the Irish listeners know Ballinasloe Woods. And all of those loops are connected by what we call these corridors. So they're just out and back sections where it's not possible with the trail network that we have in Wicklow to make a good loop. So the corridor is kind of the best way to still get a good difference of what would you say experiences. And we wanted to change Bray into more of a loop experience last year. So that was the first time we said, okay, let's make a big change to Brayhead. But that to use some of the trails we wanted to show off, we had to put in a 1400 meter section on a pavement. And it just, and some people were saying it just took the magic a little bit away. And we brought back this old staircase up to a restaurant called the Eagle's Nest that used to be on Brayhead in the 70s. And while that was a very interesting, you know, kind of cultural experience, people didn't enjoy running down a staircase late in the race so much. So this year I gave we have a markers who basically in a way look after the different sections for me, you know, nearly like kind of semi-permanent rangers. And the guy who looks after Bray for me, I want to give him a big shout out, is called Brian Kitson, because he's done a huge amount of work trying to figure out a more interesting way to mark. It took him 6 hours to mark Brayhead last year. You know, so we sat down and said, that's too much. You know, it's not reasonable to ask anyone to spend 6 hours marking a section, you know. So I said to him, look, you go away and come up with something instead of me doing it and giving it to you. And he came back with what I thought was a very interesting new section that takes in a lot of smaller trails. It takes in the secondary Bray Summit. And it reduces the amount of tarmac that's on the route. We had to, you know, go back and forth a few times because some of the trails he wanted to use actually belong to people like Bray Golf Club, and they're not all keen on letting us through their land. You know, so that's the classical discussion. So you that's kind of how you go back and forth. But what we ended up with, I think, is pretty solid. It did mean this year, though, that I'm only going to finalize the GPX actually tonight. I thought I had the final one 4 days ago. Usually, I'd never have the GPX that late, but there was just a lot of tweaking back and forth needed, and talking to people and see what we could get permission for. And I think we kind of finally know what we can do now today. You know, 7 days before the event.
Oh, okay. So is that a slightly harder descent, Rennie? Is it for the runners as they're coming into Bray?
Coming home, we've actually made it easier, you know,
Oh,
because
that's easier. Okay.
going out, there is a descent that's slightly more, you could say, single path and grass, and you know, through a narrow trail than before, where you just kind of flew down on a fairly hard packed trail that was about 2 meters wide. But coming back, you used to come down the very steep and very eroded Brayhead. It's the steepest climb on the entire course, you know, and you hit it
Yeah.
straight away. We have been looking at that for years and felt for a race like this, which has a wide audience, not just experienced mountain runners, it's a very hairy descent, especially when it's wet. And especially once it's getting dark between 7 and 8, and you have tired ultra runners coming in. You know, if it was, let's say, a UTMB race or something, that's fine. You kind of expect something extreme. So we have done a new descent this year, which is less direct. So basically, they go kind of more out to their left and down small, interesting trails that are not as steep. And they pop out on a lovely grassy track at the bottom. So we hope that'll make the descents kind of, you know, a little bit less of a leg turner, a little bit less technical, so you can, you know, you're not as challenged maybe for the final 10, 15 minutes of your event.
Yeah, cool. Okay, great. You mentioned there, Rennie, about sometimes in trail races that we do need to ask permission for access to private lands. And of course, Belmont and Kilruddery go through segments of private land as well. So is there anything new that we need to take into account for this year with Belmont and Kilruddery?
Yeah, so there are two adjacent estates that belong to two branches of the same family, the Brabazon family and the Butler family, and each have their own characteristics. So it's kind of nice to show both off. So this year we've gone back to our roots. So we've basically brought back the original route from the first year. And that allows people to go, they basically, as they come into this estate, they get to run right up a laneway to see what's called Kilruddery House, which is a really nice old house. I can't remember right now if it's Georgian or Victorian. You know, it's not really my strength, but it's one of these old houses, right? And it's kind of a nice feature to see when you're on it. And then you run up through a field where Hell and Back, you know, the famous obstacle race, have all of their obstacles, and past an old paintball center. So it's kind of interesting. There's a lot going on.
Yeah.
So we're delighted to kind of bring that back, because we did feel like we were leaving Kilruddery out a little bit, and it had to do with either there being events on from Hell and Back, so we couldn't obviously double up, or there was, because the cows in this area, it's an active farm, although it's an old estate, so the cows move around all the time, and we try not obviously to, we have to speak to the caretaker ahead of a race and say, well, where the animal's going to be, you know, and whatever he tells us, then that's how we design the route.
Yeah. And of course, just a reminder for all of our listeners that as you are going through those private lands, just to treat them so well, to leave no trace, and just to help ensure that we can get back in for future years. And that's the same message for all trail running, really, Rennie, isn't it? Just to respect the trails as much as we can.
Yeah, it's a general problem in Ireland, right? You know, there's a lot of talk about how a lot of land is closed to us as trail runners in general, because landowners don't want us. And you know, obviously there probably are examples where certain landowners may be overly harsh, you know, on or and we've seen lawsuits just across the road from me, the Glendalough Estate. There was a massive lawsuit because a local lady wanted to enforce a right of way, and it went all the way to the Supreme Court, and she eventually won against the landowner.
Oh, my.
But generally speaking, you know, you don't want it to go that far. And a lot of landowners are actually very good at getting access if you treat it with respect.
Yeah.
And if you don't go, you know, farmers generally are worried that you fall over some of their equipment and then you sue them. You know, so obviously, we as organizers have to do everything we can to make sure that people get through the right section, that they don't interfere with anything, that no one gets hurt, and that there's no kind of chance of a conflict like that. But for runners participating in races, what it means, for instance, is when you recce, don't recce the private sections outside race day, because we're only allowed the access on the day. And when you have a right of way, which sometimes exists through a private land, that you absolutely make sure you close all the gates behind you, you know, you don't leave litter, etc., because it takes so little. We saw it as well in Glenmalure, I think it was 2 years ago, the beautiful zigzags up to Lugnaquilla, great climb. I got closed permanently because the landowner got assaulted by a hiker when he told him to put his dog on a lead or something like that. You know, so these are the sort of things that. If we want to keep access to all the good routes, then everybody needs to treat them with the utmost respect, you know, like it was your best friend's back garden, essentially.
Absolutely. Like it was your own, Rennie. Like it was your own.
Yeah, even better. Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah. There's some things, you know, we can control, like, you know, leaving litter and treating the land with respect. But some things are outside of our control, Rennie. And Mother Nature can sometimes affect our training route or our race route. And I know there was some storm damage, I think, to the Powers Court section. So what's happening there this year?
Yeah, so there was obviously a lot of tree fall all over Wicklow after the storm earlier in the year, and a lot of it has been cleared, but there's still quite a lot that hasn't. And for us, it's affecting both the sections in Powers Court and Jowes Woods on what used to be called the Deer Park Trail. It's still called that, but it's not functional at the moment as a loop. And then down at the Roundwood Reservoir Trails, where most of the 10 miles that are there are not accessible at the moment. So I we obviously what happens is you are in touch with Quilter and other bodies to see what is the plan for getting it restored, you know, to operation and clearing it. And we didn't get a response for quite some time on this Jowes Woods section because we wanted just to know, will it be open and ready for race day? And I hadn't been out checking it, but the moment I went out to check it, I was like, okay, I can see why they're not responding to us, because it looked like an asteroid had hit that area. Like, it literally, those pictures from that asteroid that hit, what was it, Russia there, maybe, I think it was 70 years ago. That's what it looked like. The entire path is covered under basically a forest. The path has been ripped up with the roots of the big trees as they fell. And that means that's probably a year's of work with heavy equipment, you know, and I'm sure they're waiting for a budget to free up for that sort of machinery. So did this, it's very similar to what happened for us in Roundwood. The trees basically knocked down a fence that protects runners and hikers from this steep fall into a river. And they're only starting to repair that fence now. So, you know, we could see, okay, there's just no way this is going to get ready. And we eventually had to then figure out a different way. And all you can do is the usual thing, what every race director does. I first asked the locals who run there every day, do they have any ideas? And then you go look at the map to see is there any signs of a small trail around it, and then you go look yourself. And thankfully, this particular area is well known for mountain bike trails, and there was one that, with a little bit of hedge cutting, works really well, and it gets people around that, and the route is not fundamentally changed. But it just means if you're used to the route the way it was before, where it was really runnable trail, like really lovely underfoot, there is just a short section that's a bit steeper. You know, where you might be like, why did they put this in? Well, we put it in because unfortunately there's no other way around it now.
You're kept busy, Rene, over the course of the year. You can't be resting on your laurels as a race director at all. Unlike maybe, you know, a 5K road race director who just once they have their permissions in place, they can just rely on the same route every year. But yourself and the team there, my God, kept busy all year long. And then there's another sector that you have to look at as well, which is the Ballinasloe and the Loch Tay sector too, I believe.
Yeah, so that whole southern sector, last year, as I say, we created it as a because we wanted a new experience. So instead of having, we had a really long corridor all the way from Jowes Woods to Roundwood, where you were basically running the same out and back. And that's obviously, it's great for me as an organizer and for the markers because it saves you time, you know, less junctions, everything handy. But we just felt, it's a very long corridor. So let's try and create a new experience. So we said, we're going to do this kind of forest mystery tour. We took some ideas from an IMRA race called Ballinasloe. And then myself and a guy called Paul Duffy spent a lot of work clearing up and, you know, doing off ramps and stuff to make the small trails in the forest there a little bit more up to the standard that we need an eco trail. But we found this year then we lost 3 kilometers of good trail in Roundwood because they're being repaired. So I have to find them somewhere else. And this is what happens, obviously. If you lose something somewhere, then you just need to go back on the map and say, well, where can I find 3 kilometers? And the problem you have when you have a race with five distances is I have to pick only the 80K, obviously, because if I touch the areas for the other races, they get too long. So that wasn't an option. So it kind of really limits you in what you can do. So my choice was, okay, we're going to keep Ballinasloe, but we have to remove our little forest mystery trails this time, and we're going to use the fire roads a little bit more. So for anyone who hates fire roads, you probably don't do Eco Trail anyway, because there's a fair bit of that sort of running in it. But we had to bring in a little bit more of that this year to get to extra 3 kilometers in Ballinasloe. But it does make the route a lot more gradual. It makes the route a lot easier to navigate for the runners. That means you need to spend less mental effort figuring out, when you look at the markers, just that psychological drain. Even when a marker is there, when you're on a confusing course or a course where there's a lot of kind of small trails, you always have that little bit of doubt in your head. So you'll have less of that, I can promise. But despite the fact we only got the 80K up to about, I think, 79.7, we just could not find the other 300 meters or whatever. And we don't want to send people in a little loop on the promenade. So
Yeah,
we
you don't want to send them back to the car park.
no, so we just hope people can live with that. But we did add a climb and a descent with this change. So for those who've done the 80K before, there's one more up and down on your course, so it'll probably time-wise work out pretty similar.
Okay. Well, listen, Rennie, that's a great run through of, I think, they're the main changes on the course. And again, I think it's just going to be a really fun set of races where we touched on it when I was chatting to Emma Stewart there last week, Rennie, that we were talking about the UTMB course and how, some people might think that, oh, I'm a good ascender, I'm a good descender, I'm good in the flat sections. Where I can see from talking to you there about the different parts of the Eco Trail course that, most of the races, you will need to be good at everything. You'll need to be good at your navigation skills, your ascending, your technical descending, your fast flat running on the fire roads, etc. So it's a great challenge to look forward to for people that are going to do it.
Yeah, it is a race where you need all the skills. You probably most of all need to be good at tolerating up and downhills, because a lot like the continental mountain races, it's a race that goes in and out of villages all the time. And that means you go quite high and then you go quite low and you keep doing that. And because we use more sustainable trails, there isn't as much soft terrain, for instance, as in a pure mountain race. So it's harder on your legs. But there's also more sections where you can run really well, both flat and downhill, where you can really put the boot down. So it's important not to kind of overcook in a race like that the first few descents, because you just build up, the muscle damage too quickly. So it's definitely one of those races that's kind of how you have to play it. And I wouldn't say you need to be good navigationally on, but you do need to be switched on, because it's obviously it's marked and marshaled and all this, but one thing we found is that even when you mark, there's always a degree of subjectivity, in you can switch off just for the wrong few seconds, where you run past tape. We see that happening as well. So really the key, especially once you get tired, is just don't allow yourself to fall asleep as you approach the junction. Just have a look, and if you don't see anything, just slow down for a few seconds to see. Can you see something either side? Because if it's a totally unmarked junction, there's probably something seriously wrong. You probably already fell asleep at the last junction.
And I suspect maybe a lot of the people doing, say, the bigger distances, Renee, this might be maybe their first time attacking a 30K or 46K, or especially even an 80K, because there's very few of them around. And I think a key thing with those bigger distances is to make sure they don't go out too hard. As you said, you've got a tricky enough ascent up Bray Head at the start, but just to make sure that your RPE in those first couple of climbs are very low, are in within, the 3 out of 10 effort range, and that you're keeping that 4 out of 10, 5 out of 10 range for certainly the final quarter, the final third of those big distances.
Yeah, definitely. Because you lose so much when you overcook a race like this, you lose so much potential gain at the end. Because if you're in a like a really rough mountain race, you could say if you slow down a lot at the end, maybe the people who pace it better don't gain quite as much, because maybe it's still really, really rough terrain. So you can only move so fast, essentially, is what I'm trying to say. Whereas in a race like this, if you are able to keep running well the whole way through, you'll be running really, really fast down the last descent. So someone who blows it on the last one or two, you are gonna just absolutely lose minutes on people who get it right. You know,
Yeah.
so and especially with a race like this as well, where you start at the seaside and you have to go up a 19% gradient for a kilometer, it's really not worth risking a lot because you don't actually lose that much by dialing it back a bit.
Sure,
You know,
and of course,
it's
it's a great finish for a sprint finish, René, as well. We saw it in the marathon in the World Championships this week, a couple of sprint finishes around the final lap. I wonder will we have any sprint finishes down the promenade this year in any of our races?
Yeah, it's 800 meters flat, right? So you need to
Yeah,
be
yeah.
if you kind of totally destroy your legs, that's a long 800 meters. But it's one of these finishes definitely where you get as you'll be there own shouting them all over the line. So it's a good one if you can be running because there'll be lots of video footage of you and you know photos and razzmatazz and the whole thing. So yeah, do
Brilliant.
your if you're listening and if you're racing, do your best, you know,
To have
to
that sprint finish ready to
Yeah,
go, right?
yes, to have that sprint finish. So,
Exactly. Well, Rennie, where will we see you next Saturday? Do you have your designated driver yet to help you get around the course? Will you be staying at race headquarters or will you be out on the course itself? Just in case people want to say hello to you as they're running through the courses.
yeah, so if they want to catch me, they have to be early because I leave the seafront around before 7,
You
and
do, yeah.
yeah, and then I am basically ahead of the first runner in the 80K for the first half of the day, and then I am behind the last runner of the 80K until 8 o'clock when I come back.
Okay.
You know, so it's hard. It's quite hard to actually run into me. But if you're an 80K runner, they usually see me hanging about in the middle of the day where we take our base right in the middle at Roundwood. You know, because we
Yeah.
wait for all the 80K runners to get down there and then start their journey back north. So that's your best chance. But of course, if you go partying in Bray and it's after 9 p.m., you can feel free to come in and say hello to the team because we always meet up in the Martello to celebrate after the race is done.
Brilliant stuff, anyways. And thanks a million for all your hard work over the last couple of weeks and getting those race courses together. I know a lot of people, 1,800 people, are going to enjoy those race courses next weekend. So thanks a million, Rennie. And listen, sure, we'll talk to you on the other side of Eco Trail Wicklow 2025.
I'll see you at the start line, Owen, all right?
Okay, bye, bye.
For our feature interview this week, I cannot wait to chat to somebody that I've been racing against and racing alongside for over 20 years now. One of the great members of the Irish Mountain Running family. Let's chat to Ireland's new over 40 world champion. Ian Conroy, world champion. Ian, you're very, very welcome to the show. And Ian, I've missed you. It's been June 2020 since the last time you were on the show. And we had a great chat that day, if you remember, about, I think, becoming over 35 world champion, about running for Ireland and the 2019 World Championships and the trial race and the effort and the sacrifices you made to get on that Irish team. So I'm really looking forward to chatting to you today and chatting to the new over 40 world champion. Ian, you're very, very welcome.
Thanks, Owen. Yeah, it's great to be back on, and it's great to talk to you. I haven't really chatted to you properly personally either. I do enjoy your voice messages. They're always good and long and personal as well. And yeah, great to be back. And there's a reason for it, because I'm over 40s champion, and just in time because I'm over 45 in a few short months. So.
Yeah, so of course, you know, you got the over 40 gold medal in to add to your over 35. And you know, that just gives you the opportunity, doesn't it, to try and become a world champion in your age category forevermore. You've got the over 35, you've got the over 40. Next year, you know, I presume you're gonna go for the over 45 and get the triple G again, get the triple gold medals.
Yeah, totally. Well, I suppose what's kept me going since 2016 is that I didn't win overall. I've always wanted to win the overall, like beat everybody.
Yeah.
So in 2016, I was out from 3K onwards. I was out in front, like I was way ahead of the field for a while, and then two very good runners caught me. Cesar Costa, at the time I didn't know who he was, and I just basically tried to run him into the ground, and he's like, you know, he's very legendary. He's ran Sierras and all many times. I think he's been top three in it. And of course, then Jono Wyatt caught me with like 100 meters to go. So I was a bit deflated when I finished that. And then ever since then, I've been trying to get that overall. But thankfully, you did get a few bonus medals along the way. So I will be trying once again to win the overall next year and then hopefully get my goal as well. So that's the aim.
Maybe just to set the scene for the gold medal this year, Ian, and to talk about the build up towards it and how you train to become a world mountain running masters champion, because I'm sure we have lots of listeners that would love to go to a European or world masters championship. And again, guys, you don't need to qualify for these Irish teams. You can just sign up, join the group, and go along and race as hard as you can. But when we spoke in June 2020, and again, just to say to the listeners, the pedigree that you have, you had 21 Irish senior caps in 2020. Now, COVID happened, we missed a couple of championships. I know you added at least one more senior cap with the Europeans in 2024, and maybe confirm maybe what number you're at now. There might have been one or two other tournaments in there as well. So 21, 22, at least 22 Irish senior caps. What was the main objectives for 2025, Ian? Was it to make the senior team for the World Championships in Canfranc this year? Because I know you were at the trial race back in June, didn't quite work out. Or was it to try and do the two, maybe, to make the Irish senior team and go for the World Championships? Or how did the year start off for you, 2025?
Yeah, and it was a difficult year. So since last year, I ran myself into the ground a little bit last year because I was a victim of my own success. So last year, I got back into the Irish senior team, and then I kind of had an injury anyway. And actually went to what was it, Annecy last year, kind of a bit injured, and actually had to get treatment the night before. And it was such a
Oh
cold.
no.
Yeah, that was a wasn't good. It was so cold that. It was it's a tendon on the inside of my ankle, so it actually hurt during the race. But anyway, that's another story. But that kind of subsided. But then my ankle started getting sore on the other foot, maybe a compensation. And then I just ran and ran and race and kept picking up like invites. And I ended up in Puglia in Italy in November. And then after that, I was very tired. And then I just thought it would just go away, but when I started back after my 2 week rest, it didn't, and I kind of like limped my way into the new year and continued to do that March, April, and I just kept thinking, and running became a bit of a chore. I could kind of do sessions, ironically or weirdly enough, and I could do uphill stuff, but the easy runs, the long runs, they were a big problem. And yeah, it was a kind of a disaster of a spring where I had back problems, hip problems, sciatica.
Oh no, yeah.
Yeah, I couldn't sleep. There was a bit of 2 week period I couldn't really sleep because I was in so much pain. It wasn't good. And then I bought a new mattress, which my girlfriend Charlotte, who I don't know if the listeners know, is she's pretty much the same kind of athlete. She hates downhill, loves uphill, and she's really good. Well, maybe she doesn't love it, but she's brilliant at it. And she runs for Belgium, living out of Madrid. And where was I?
Just in lots of pain at the start of the
Yeah. So
year,
she was
Ian.
like, "It's your bed," because she came over in like January, and she was staying there. I was like, "What have you done to the bed? Like, it's like got holes in it." And I was like, "Well, I can do anything," but apparently, like mattresses can just almost go. Like they're fine, and then they're just useless. So I've got I don't know if it is it a plug. My cousin works for Mattress Mick, so I got a Mattress Mick mattress, and it's like it's incredible. It's like really firm all over, doesn't collapse in here. But anyway, once I got that with lots of nudging from Charlotte for me to get it, it took away like 70% of the pain. So I think I was getting treatment for these things, but then I was going to bed and waking up worse, and then that was a turning point in say April, and then things started to clear up. My ankle was still sore, but I then went into the early summer like kind of unfit, and then I just took up the racing, the race invites and stuff like that, and the plans I had, and I kept doing them, but they were fairly disastrous. You'd have like an okay race and then other ones because I had no fitness. And but there was a turning point in May. Sharif actually won the Europeans there outright in Sicily, up Mount Etna, which was a pretty amazing race, because it was, well, it was all ash. Like I did not like the course whatsoever, but I think I came like I don't know, 40 odd or something. So like that was just, it was horrendous. But that was kind of the first time that I ran without pain. So, you know, if that could be sort of running, Charlotte went on and she won in the last 200 meters to take her fifth European Masters title, which is pretty
Wow.
good. Yeah. She's got pedigree anyway. I'm
Yeah.
always letting side down with like silver and bronze medals anyway. But yeah, that was for turning points. And then after that, I got a bit of training in and then I went back to the Irish trial for Canfranc, the World Championships. And yes, that to answer your earlier question, that was the aim this year. Get into the Irish senior team because I've done the course last year in the Masters. I like the course. It has I think it has about 1106.4K, something like that. You can check that. Well, maybe I could check it too, actually.
Yeah.
I've got the internet here. I'm not really certain. But anyway, yeah, so I was aiming for that. And I just
And that
wasn't.
would have been Irish senior cap 23 in
23, yes. There's a
23,
few that
yeah.
like I had that I'm confirmed as 2023 two at the moment by is it Kieran Kelly like looked them all up and he wrote a book. And so he got a few ratified. Like there's a certain parameters and all the sort of stuff that you have to do.
Yeah, and I think there's only one person ahead of you, Ian, and that's the fantastic, legendary Sarah McCormick, who I think is either on 25 or going for 25, seeing
Yeah,
what
she's
happened in the
on
World
her way.
Championships this year.
Although Sarah Mulligan is back in the running,
Yeah.
and she got back into the team this year. So, but I wonder where I think Zach Hanna is probably
Yeah.
quickly catching up. Yeah, I've got to get in ahead of him.
Yeah,
But
yeah, yeah.
yeah, Sarah McCormick is flying.
So, who would have thought, Aline, that a mattress from Mattress Mick was a key piece in getting fit again? And I say that seriously. So, you just reckon that because the mattress was so soft, so broken, for whatever reason, it wasn't giving you good sleep, you got a firmer mattress, and that allowed the body to rest better? Is that essentially what the
Yeah, but
mattress
also like this. So
solution was?
I had back issues as well. So therefore, it was probably throwing me out, and every little thing was hurting. And I'd be on a bus, and you know, a bus would lurch or a train, and like I put my back out. Like I felt ancient. You know, I thought
Yeah.
like it shouldn't be this. And I get up, and I'd have terrible sciatica getting out of a chair. I just felt like I felt worse getting up in the morning than I felt before I went to bed. So yeah, and I was sleeping poorly as well. So yeah, I think that was a big turning point. And then that
A
brought
great tip
yeah.
in because over the years with the podcast, we've mentioned lots of hopefully interesting and useful recovery tips and injury prevention tips, but that's actually a very good one that we haven't mentioned before, to make sure you have a good firm mattress so you don't run into any back issues, which can have, of course, those knock-on effects and cause those compensation injuries. And so, again, it just goes to show how the year can turn around, and it's a great message for myself, for anybody listening, that you could be in the depths of misery, kind of, injured, not running well, not in good form, but just keep the head down, keep on working, keep on training, and within 5 or 6 months, in your case, you become a world champion. Now, not everybody's going to become a world champion, but just the point being that if you stick with it and stay the course, in 5 or 6 months' time, you can be in a totally different place for a
Yeah.
race or whatever it might be to where you were a couple of months ago. Just to keep the faith and stay strong.
Yeah, I think that was like, but that's kind of my lifetime of running, I suppose, since I grew up. I always wanted to run for Ireland, like you like wanted to play for Ireland in football.
Yeah.
So it's this is just a smaller version of that. So I kept doing it, even though I felt like I was banging my head against a brick wall, that I had to keep showing up, as Ricky Wynn would say, every day and just keep trying and keep doing the strength and conditioning. And then I was going to Mark Keneally. I'm sure you know him
Yeah.
from Planlife. He's a bit the same age as us. So he was telling me, look, you're old now, Ian, or older even. You have to do like strength and conditioning or mobility. And you should probably like think about those days that you do those 2 easy days, which for me would be like I do an hour on typically on a Monday and I do like half an hour on a Friday. So he's like, they might one of those days or both of those days might be days that you do like strength stuff and try and mobilize your body instead of doing a run, and maybe you're running less nowadays. And I was like, that's a hard thing to accept.
Absolutely, yeah.
Maybe not the age, but the like I'd be someone that I remember some really good years. I might have taken one in like just one single rest day. 2015, I remember that I took one rest day after Snowden because I didn't get any sleep. But that's a different story. But anyway, it was a good day. And
And
but yeah.
knowing for yourself that likes to plan things as well. I remember in the interview back in 2020, you did have certain markers in terms of where you need your training and fitness to be before you go and execute that big championship race. And again, a great lesson for anybody listening to have these markers that are relevant for yourself. And your ones where I think, you want to be running 80 miles a week, you want to be hitting 2 hours in your long runs, comfortably breaking sub 16 minutes, about 60 kilos. And if you are all those things, then you're ready to perform and make an Irish team or be up there fighting for medals in a Masters Championship or whatever. So, how close were you to those four key points going into Italy and the World Championships?
Yeah, that is the difference now, because I wasn't really taken away, like, so my weight has become less of a thing now since, so I might have been verging on the, like, thinking about that too much. I wouldn't say I had an eating disorder, but I probably, so I had been vegan and vegetarian, but I think 2023 was a change. I basically just started eating meat again, and I'm not, like, say, I'm not throwing out, nutritional advice or life advice to people, but that for me made a big difference. I regained all my muscle mass from when I'm like from 20 years previously. My weight is anywhere between like 59 to 63 kilos now, and I don't actually have to worry about or try. So I would be around like 60, 61 kilos. So that
Okay.
first part, but that's without trying. But I just, and I would say at times during the season, I'd easily have broken 60, and I probably would now, give me a day or two. But the 80 miles a week, you're looking at, no, it was like 30 miles a week average for the year. It was just like, yeah. And that I really struggled. I was like, how am I going to do this? But then when I, after the trial for Canfranc Franc, which didn't work out because basically I wasn't fit enough. I wasn't speed, like, they were running at, say, maybe sub 15, 5K pace, maybe 14, four, they were all like on it from the start, and it starts on a road and they all legged it, and I was basically about 25th after the first downhill, and I kind of scraped myself back in. But it's not a good trial for an uphill race, really. I felt that, give me a month, or, and I did subsequently. I just, in this year was different. I got fit through racing, and the races were savagely uphill, and they were mostly vertical kilometers, so 5K with a 1,000 meter gain or so. And I remember going to Italy, when was it, for an earlier race. I think it was the end of May or early June, maybe. It was the Nasigo weekend, which you have like a vertical climber on Saturday and kind of half marathon 20K on the Sunday. And we both, myself and Charlotte, had an invite to be there in the World Cup. And I had to tell the organizer, I can't run tomorrow. I'm just too injured, because I was both. I felt I'd underperform, and the Irish team was there, and that would like demoralize me, and I would look rubbish having been so well the previous year. And then also I felt I'd injure myself, but that was a good choice. And that's maybe, I don't know, is that age or experience that I chose to do that. And I went for a run on the course, and I actually felt okay. And then that snowballed. And then I went, like, I know the Irish trial didn't go well, but I tried to take the positives from each one. I was like, well, I wasn't rubbish. Completely, I was like, okay, give or take. And then it progressed to going to VKs across Europe, and the only difference being comparatively to what I did last year with more mileage is that I was in more pain in the races. It was such a strange feeling. So I'd go, whereas a Piz-tree Vertical is part of the Milano Invite Weekend, and Milano, AS Milano, they're a fantastic team. Heidi, Welsh runner, used to run for Team GB. She organizes, she's the translator and stuff there. It's an incredibly high level vertical kilometer, and I had a really amazing race there last year. I think I was like 20th or something like that, and it was one of my fastest vertical kilometers. Very sad, I was exhausted after. But this year I was faster by 74 seconds, and I actually, in the race, I thought, like, it started fast apparently, but I felt it was really slow. I was like, geez, this is kind of easy. And I was running alongside a Kenyan for like a good half of the race, but I felt in agony. I was like, I'm running terribly here. I was just like, I was walking at times, and, like, like, para hiking, something you hate doing, but actually I was faster. So that's kind of been my season for most part, that it has felt much harder. But I've been kind of like, maybe it's, I don't know, like by using the hiking and starting slightly slower, or I'm not thinking that I'm in great shape, I've managed to like get myself through the race and faster. So I finished 15th then, and I ran a 38 K. So.
Yeah, and it's probably Ian as well that even though we do get injured and we miss a couple of weeks, that when you've been running for more than 20 years like yourself, the body does remember. It has all that muscle memory. You have all of those experiences that you can draw upon, and we're probably never as unfit as we think, or we're never going to perform as badly as we kind of catastrophize about. That you have that natural fitness, you have that natural fight there, and that will always be there, and that will always help you get through races. And then to bring it to the World Championship race, Ian, talk to me about those moments before the gun goes off in Madunu, and you've got Mexicans, Italians, Spanish all around you. Where are you feeling confident about first of all, I suppose getting the over 40 podium, never mind win. Or where you're kind of going into the unknown here, and because I know you do like to try and predict your race positions, and you like to speak confidently before races, before the over 35 one. I think I remember you talking about how like you knew you were going to win, and you were going to go for the win. And what was it like in Maduna a couple of weeks ago? How were you feeling just before that gun went off?
It was a strange one because I've kind of like, I know I'm from Ireland and all, it rains here a lot over the coast, beside Howth, but it was bucketing down over there, and I did not like that because I don't know, I get kind of get cold sometimes. But however, Charlotte and myself, we recce'd the course on the Wednesday, and the race was on the Friday. So like, it's, what was it, 5K with 700 or something gains. So it was steep, but not unbelievably steep. And but it was fairly mud bath like. And thanks to James Kevin, who you know from the Ireland team, he collected us at the top of the thing. And thanks to Charlotte, she really wanted and needed a recce to do the recce. And I usually just balk at such ideas because I think, well, I'll look at the, I suppose, the road book, and I'll maybe do the end of it, and then I'll do the first K in my warm up, and that I'll just like visualize it. Usually I close my eyes and visualize it, and I know where I'm going to make my move or whatever. So this time I actually knew the course, and because it was so muddy and it was single track, like kind of concertina from single track to larger and back in again, and it would have been difficult to know from the road book or the, what do you call it? We'll call it the road book, like you have in any
The course
cycling.
guide, yeah.
Yes, exactly. And so then I knew, okay, so the first part, it's go single track right away, and that goes into, what is it? It kind of opens up, but it's a mud bath then after the road, and don't panic, and goes back and forth, and then it widens out a little bit. So beforehand, I knew that anyway. And Charlotte had all sorts of issues the day of the race. She was very nervous, as far as I was aware. And she ended up leaving her shoes behind, and we're just at the race. And she was like, I don't have my shoes. And so I couldn't do anything to help her because I had to go and warm up. So that all happened, and she found her shoes. But maybe that kind of helped me in a little bit because it focused my mind, because I had started to feel nervous because I don't look at who's in the race generally, because it shouldn't be about who's in the race. Like, so it doesn't matter if you're, there's only ever one winner, let's face it. So everyone else is second, third, whatever. So I know it's different in a Masters where you're like over first, over 40, et cetera. But I was focusing on my race, and that's what I always try to do. I focus on my execution of my plan. So I knew it was going to go really hard. But like the clappers, and it's single track, and then everyone would panic and stuff. So I was, okay, I'm not going to worry about that. I'm not going to do Ian Conroy as usual. I'm feeling a bit tired. I'm not going to go out flat out at the beginning. I'm just going to like get out safe. So that was in my mind. And I went into the call room really early, because I didn't want to forget. And then I warmed up, and I kind of nervous then, but I just started chatting to people and drank some water, and then I relaxed. And then all I do is I visualize everything going well. I knew I was fit enough that I was probably the fastest VK specialist in the race. So in the really steep stuff, I'd have that. I had some speed. I'd say overall, I was pretty confident of winning the over 40s. I didn't know for certain for the over the like overall, but yeah. So when it came down to the start, I was confident. Like I kind of try and get myself into a positive frame of mind. If someone asks me, how do you feel? I say, I'm amazing. I'm ready to go. So when I was standing on the start line, so before we got out, it was like it was chock a block, and I was at the back of like 200 people. And then, you get, they pull back the barriers and we run out to the roads. And then I just get up. I had to squeeze past everyone to the front, and I couldn't quite get on the front line because it was quite chock a block. So I was behind the front line, which is a bit annoying for me, but I wasn't panicking. Charlotte was there. She had been worried that I'd missed the call room. And I remember just putting my, like, is it my index finger up? Like the number one, like I felt I'm going to win. That's, and even if I wasn't, that was like, that's my plan. I'm good enough to win. So it just, I suppose I'll let you ask another question, but then the gun went and.
Well, I suppose the Mexican athlete, he was a clear winner of the overall race. Agustino Luis Coronado, I think
Coronado, yeah.
his name, yeah. So a clear winner there. But again, he's over 35, so there is that difference between someone that's maybe in the over five category and someone that's just about to go into the over 45. He is playing, I think, with a physiological advantage. So let's leave him aside for a minute. He won the overall race, Ian. But you did have a battle with for the over 40 gold medal, because who was it? The German athlete Niels Lennart was it Nice? No, let me just open up the results here. No, it wasn't Nice. He's over 35. Sorry, it
You
was
have Matthew. You
the
got
French
Matthew
athlete, Matthew Gandolfi.
Gandolfi,
Sorry, yeah, the
yeah.
French athlete, and he was only about 20 seconds behind you. So, Ian, like, did you have any awareness that the next over 40 athlete was just behind it? Did you go by Matthew at any stage? And when did you realize that actually I'm in world championship gold medal winning position here in the over 40 category? Yeah, let's push on. Let's take home a gold for Ireland.
Yeah, it was quite difficult. So like went, so the gun went and people went nuts. And I remember we got to the tight part, we went maybe around three bends, and then I think I was in like 25th or, and I know one often thinks like the worst. I was like way down. I was like, this might be the end here. Where's it going? But I didn't panic. And somebody and Thomas from Switzerland said this to me afterwards. He said, "Oh, you didn't panic," but I was. There was a little bit of internal panic at that point, and I was like, "Okay, don't." And then I picked people off, and then I was up to about 15th or 16th. But I had seen where the race had gone, or where I could see like those groups, and I kind of knew who my competitors were anyway. So there was a chap called Massimiliano from Italy. He was third in Madeira 2 years ago, so I knew he was pretty good. And I knew Matthew from last year racing him in Canfranc, where he was like really disappointed. Disappointingly for him, he was fourth, but I couldn't like, he's really upset and stuff. But I couldn't give him my bronze because it would have been that was. And then he beat me for silver medal in the Europeans last year as well. So I knew his pedigree. And then who else was there?
Okay,
There was
so
another, yeah, go
really some
on.
really good over 40 runners
Yeah.
there. And just to go through that again, like you were a good bit back in then at the start. So you must have just really managed the course, the race really well, moved through the field. And when was it that you maybe went by? Was it Matthew? Did you go by Matthew? Was he your last over 40 athlete standing? At one stage you went by him and went into that pole position.
No, it was a lot more convoluted and I don't know, scary at times, not for me. Because there was another two, there's another Italian as well. I didn't, I just knew because you could see it's wonderfully, it says people's like M40,
Yeah.
M35 on their backs. So you can, they're like, you zoom in on that. But I basically started picking people off when I was in about 15, 16 days. I knew there was maybe three groups. There was like the leaders. And then there was like a second group, and then it was just all fracturing. So I just basically picked them off one by one. I said, I need that man. I need that guy. I need that guy. And I went in the undergrowth at times, scratching my arms, And I remember going, dude, I just like, okay, that's another one. I must be in about fifth or sixth place over in M40s. And then I remember I got Matthew, I don't know, maybe a third or yeah, a bit further on, maybe 2K into the race. I went past him. I didn't really say because I'm friends with him. I didn't say anything to him because, you know, in that situation, you're like, do you say something? Do you say something to make him like feel worse, or do they, you know, like, oh, well done. And I don't know, you could you play a psychological game, but I try and steer clear of those because I think it's I could be mean is what it could be. And also
Yeah, just
I
head
think,
down and keep going.
yeah, just be fair, right? And because he would never do that to me, so I was like, I just shut the hell up, went past him. But then I knew the main guy to get is Massimiliano, because I felt that he was when I saw the group fracture or at the beginning, I felt that he was the last over 40 ahead, because he was in about fourth or fifth position or something like that, or maybe sixth overall. And I thought, I think he's the guy. So I kept overtaking him. And when I overtook him, I think it was about 700 meters to go, and maybe a little bit more. I overtook him and I felt, okay, that's I'm pretty certain I'm in the lead now, but I just kept pushing and pushing because I couldn't be certain. But I also had, so my race plan was being enacted. I knew at halfway, I'd have to start pushing because there was a few downhills and windings, so just keep going on those. And then there was a really hike up with about 2K to go, or maybe a kilometer and a half to go. There was a massive hike, very steep. And then after that steepness, it was kind of like an uphill cross country with no, like for me, no major. People would say it's quite steep, but so I had to get up that as quick as possible and then just hammer all the way to the finish. And like, so by the time you got to the grassy bits at the end, like the race was over. You should have had your move made by then, like in advance of a sprint finish, because it was difficult to have a sprint finish in the kind of undulations at the end. So I did that. But all the while, Matthew was doing exactly like, so I'd overtaken, but he wasn't like lying down on this. He was like, I'm coming for you, Irish. He's like all the way behind me. So if you look up at any of the photographs, he's just right in my rear wing mirror or whatever the whole, and I never looked back. I didn't know this. I thought it was somebody else. I could hear the click clack of poles, which I'm against generally, and I just never looked back. And he was just, it was carnage behind me. He was cutting through the field like I had gone before him, and he was just eyeing me the entire way. And he wasn't certain where he was. Really, I was more certain, I think. So in the end, it was 23 seconds. He actually wrote a nice thing on, I think it was Facebook or Strava about it, and we'll come to the ending of his story, which is the ending of my story too, at the end of the race. But yeah, I just kept going because I enacted my plan. I was never going to be disappointed if it didn't work out. So whether
Yeah.
it was steam or like I had rolled the dice, I kept my plan and actually it was working out. And then all the way to the finish, I just hammered. And there was a very good friend of mine, Mark from Spain. He finished third overall and second over 35, but he was mile clear at one point. And I think he felt bad for me when he passed me, and he dropped me basically much earlier on. He's like, come on in. I was like nowhere at that point. But he finished only like 4 seconds ahead of me in the end. Like he did, so I nearly got third overall. And
That's a
plus it was
really
like a,
strong finish.
yeah, it was, but I
When you
had,
did
yeah.
cross the finish line in, did you realize that you had won the over 40?
Well, I kind of looked around and there was nobody there. Like there was only three people to finish. So I was like,
Yeah.
I was like, I thought
I
like,
did
I was like, look, I was like, oh, there's no one here. That's,
it.
I'm pretty certain I've won. And then doping control came along and then I was like, get in. And he's like, oh, I'm just here. You just finished first over. And then Matthew finished because he was only like 100 meters behind me. And then he's like, we went down for the bit of food, you know, there's like drinks and stuff at the end of the race. And he was like, did you win? And I was like, yeah, I was first. And he was like, that means I was second. And Massimiliano, the Italian, had hung on for third place then. And then we actually had like a group hug, like, which was like, it
Great.
was
And
unusual. So yeah,
just
it
to go
was.
back a second, did you say that you had to go to doping control
I
at the end of
did,
it?
yes.
Wow, well,
Winners
isn't
go
that
for doping.
fantastic to see, Ian? I'm sure a little bit of an inconvenience for you, but isn't that
It
fantastic to
wasn't
see?
great, but it was
That
also, it's good. It's good for the sport, but it's
it
also
is
like,
good for the sport, Ian. Yeah, it is. It's
it's also
brilliant.
like, obviously I'm not like getting tested all the time and all, so it's not that much of an inconvenience. And also it's to have a clean sport, like
Absolutely. Absolutely brilliant. No, great to hear that. Ian, I presume, was it later that day or was it maybe the next day when I hope did they play the national anthem and the tricolour was raised? Did that happen?
Yeah,
it normally
that
does.
Happened.
It happened, yeah.
That happened that evening. Yeah, so about, I don't know, 8 o'clock that evening. It the Aaron Levine rang out once again in Italy, for
yes.
me and Ireland, and also we had a few other team goals as well. I think like Becky.
Yeah, we had four. I have it here in front of me, and we had four team Irish gold medals, just yourself on the individual side. So five times Aaron Levine got to be played at the World Championships this year, which is fantastic. And I'm sure was it as emotional as always being on top of the world podium and hearing our national anthem. I'm sure it was absolutely a brilliant moment for you.
Yeah, it was amazing because I suppose in the intervening period of being last time on, that was like 9 years ago, I've made, you know, or I was going to say I've made loads of new friends, but like they've honored me with their friendship, and I've met Charlotte. So like they were all there and Charlotte was taking pictures, and it was a lovely moment, I suppose, to share with Charlotte. And I suppose it's different. Like I am different as a, I don't know, elder statesman now, that I always try to do my best, but it's weird because I don't necessarily feel like amazingly like stoked when it happens. Sometimes it's like a slow burner, and I'll be looking at the medal later going, yeah, I'm pretty proud of that. That was a tough race. I think it was still, but I was very happy. Yes, I was delighted to step on the podium. There's the moment when they call you out and then you run up, and it's great. And I was very happy. The podium was with friends, which is cool. Like the two guys, I knew them. Matthew and I have like raced a good few times against each other. And we were all kind of like happy to be there, which is a nice feeling. We shared it, even though I won. But subsequently, actually, Matthew won on the Sunday. So he got his first gold in the classic race and finished third overall. So he won the over-40s on the Sunday. So he got his dedication too paid off, and his, I suppose, fairness in competition as well, because he's a great competitor, but gives it his all, but he's fair, and he's a nice guy. So
yeah, well listen, Ian, time is against us, so maybe with that image of an Irish singlet, yourself worn by yourself on top of the world podium and alongside, again, just reading the stats here, in 22 Irish team podiums, six individual world championship medals from the Irish team. So for any of our listeners that love the mountains, that love trails, that love to travel, that would like to be part of an Irish team, an Irish squad, check out where the next European or World Masters are on. And going on the last number of years in and our Irish records at these championships, Irish results at these championships, you're more than likely, if you go, to be celebrating an Irish gold medal, whether it be team or gold. And maybe we might leave it there, Ian, and I might say I look forward to hopefully seeing you go for that over 45 gold medal to make it 3 out of 3, hopefully next year, if not the year after. Ian, it's been lovely talking to you again, and thanks a million for sharing all of that.
Cheers, Owen. Yeah, it's a pleasure, and hopefully you'll be back next year as well. That's in either... What is it? It's in the Czech Republic.
Is it? I was going to ask. The Europeans in the Czech Republic. Is it?
And then worlds are in Czech Republic, but it's at the end of June, and the Europeans are in September for a change, and they are in Romania, in Transylvania.
Well, there's two fantastic destinations. Yeah. There we go, listeners. European and Worlds for next year, and you'll get to see Ian Conroy go for the triple gold medal. Ian, great to talk to you, mate. And listen,
cheers,
enjoy
Owen.
Your training this weekend.
Okay.
Thank
bye
you.
Bye bye. Thanks.
Well, there we have it, guys. Hopefully you enjoyed that chat with Ian. And I'm sure, like myself, I just want to put on my runners and get out on some trails after listening to Ian there. Congrats again, Ian, on a fantastic gold medal. Best of luck to everybody running in Eco Trail this weekend in Bray. I look forward to seeing you all there. Do pop over to say hello. And best of luck to the Irish team in the World Mountain Running and Trail Running World Championships this weekend in Canfranc in northern Spain. Guys, have a great championships. Best of luck to you. Everybody, get your running gear on. Let's go.